Publishing moves slowly until it doesn't. The truly exciting moments, going to auction, negotiating deals, fielding calls from potential editors, choosing a publisher, are a dizzying whirlwind. But the rest involves a lot of staring at your phone and waiting for updates. Most books are sold up to 2 years before they're released. The big announcements we're always seeing online, book deal, movie deal, TV deal, awards nominations, have been open secrets for weeks, if not months. All the excitement and surprise are feigned for social clout. The Last Front won't come out until 15 months after I sign my contract. Until then, there's production. I receive my edit letter 2 months after the deal. My editor at Eden is Daniela Woodhouse, a deep-voiced, no-nonsense, fast-talking woman who both intimidated and intrigued me during our first phone call. I remembered she'd gotten into some kerfuffle at a conference last year when she called a fellow female panelist pathetic for arguing that sexism in the industry remained an obstacle, after which all sorts of online personalities labeled her an enemy of women and demanded she make a public apology, if not resign. She did neither. That doesn't seem to have impacted her career. In the last year, she's published 3 bestsellers: a novel about the interior lives of murderous and sexy housewives, a thriller about a classical pianist who makes a deal with the literal devil in exchange for a legendary career, and a memoir by a lesbian beekeeper. I was hesitant about signing with Eden Press at first, especially since it was an indie publisher instead of one of the big 5: HarperCollins, Penguin Random House, Hachette, Simon & Schuster, and Macmillan. But Brett convinced me that at a mid-size house, I'd be a big fish in a small pond, that I'd get all the care and attention I never felt at my first publisher. Sure enough, compared to Garrett, Daniela practically coddles me. She responds to all my emails within the day, often within the hour, and always in depth. She makes me feel like I matter. When she tells me this book will be a hit, I know that she means it. I like her editorial style, too. Most of her requested changes are simple clarifications. Are American audiences going to know what this phrase means? Should this flashback be placed in this early chapter when we haven't met the character in the proper timeline yet? This dialogue exchange is artful, but how does it move the story along? Honestly, I'm relieved. Finally, someone's calling Athena out on her bullshit, on her deliberately confusing sentence structures and cultural allusions. Athena likes to make her audience work for it. On the topic of cultural exposition, she's written that she doesn't see the need to move the text closer to the reader when the reader has Google and is perfectly capable of moving closer to the text. She drops in entire phrases in Chinese without adding any translations. Her typewriter doesn't have Chinese characters, so she left spaces and wrote them out by hand. It took me hours of fiddling with an OCR to search them online, and even then I had to strike out about half of them. She refers to family members in Chinese terms instead of English, so you're left wondering if a given character is an uncle or a second cousin. I've read dozens of guides to the Chinese kinship nomenclature system by now. It makes no goddamn sense. She's done this in all her other novels. Her fans praise such tactics as brilliant and authentic, a diaspora writer's necessary intervention against the whiteness of English. But it's not good craft. It makes the prose frustrating and inaccessible. I am convinced it is all in service of making Athena and her readers feel smarter than they are. Quirky, aloof, and erudite is Athena's brand. Commercial and compulsively readable, yet still exquisitely literary, I've decided, will be mine.